Near-Death Experience Podcast, an ongoing exploration of spiritually transformative experiences, including NDEs and other phenomena, in order to elucidate the ineffable and better understand our spirituality. All episodes are available at ndepodcast.org. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and guests are not necessarily those of NDE Podcast, the NDERF, any sponsors, or for that matter, anyone else. In the end, the only opinion that really matters is yours. Near-Death Experience Podcast, item number 321, November 1st, 2020. The NDEs of Robert C. Welcome to Near-Death Experience Podcast, the official podcast and source of audio accounts for the Near-Death Experience Research Foundation. I'm your host, John Messer. Before I start, I want to thank everyone for listening and supporting the podcast. Chaz and I are ever so grateful for your support and your feedback. Thank you, thank you, thank you. The description of Robert C.'s NDE is posted on the NDERF website twice. Once on March 23rd, 2013, but there was also a less thorough description that was submitted on December 17th, 2007. I'm going to share mostly from the detailed report and use some of the information from the earlier report to fill in and enhance details. You should read Robert C.'s complete report on the NDERF.org website, and there's a link to it provided in the show notes of this episode. Robert's account on the NDERF website is quite lengthy and includes information that, while interesting to read, is not directly related to his STEs. These details include things like descriptions of the vehicles involved and the effort to get the train off of his lap. So I do urge you to click the link in the show notes and read his complete account for yourself. Robert C. has had multiple STEs, including two NDEs, the first of which occurred in September of 1965, when Robert was about 16 years old. It was an event that Robert says changed his life forever. To fully appreciate Robert's complete account, I have to go back earlier than September of 1965. Robert was about 3 years old when his parents and he were driving into town. A neighbor's horse had walked through the gate at the bottom of a hill, and his father hit the horse with their 47 Chevy. The horse flew through the front window and landed on his parents and on Robert. The horse head was on Robert's lap. We should note here that Robert was probably in the front seat because at that time there were no child protective seats and recommendations for kids to sit in the back seat. So he was probably sitting between his parents on the front seat. Robert writes this about this event. I have no real memory of that, but I know that I was unhurt. However, after that happened, I started doing odd things that upset Dad a lot, like the time we were halfway to town and I turned in the seat and started yelling at the barn was on fire. We were so far away from the house, there was no way I could possibly have seen flames or even a glow. But I would not relent. Dad was yelling at me to shut up and finally slapped me. That did no good, so he angrily turned around and drove back home, thinking that a screaming brat had ruined dinner. As we pulled into the driveway, a small flame flickered into sight under the barn. Dad had been drying corn in an old tin bushel tub over another one with a bed of coals. They were set up on bricks, but a coal had dropped through a rusted-out hole in the tub and dropped to the straw. The fire was just getting a hold when we got home, and Dad easily put it out with the hose. He did not speak to me for a really long time after that. He just watched me. a few more events like that, including running away from the little one-room school at the base of the hill in the middle of a lesson, just in time to find my mom had fallen through the back door window while on a ladder cleaning out the gutters. She had badly cut her arm, and I stopped the bleeding and called the neighbors to come help. That also was rewarded with a quiet that countered Mom's overstated praise. Back to 1965. Robert was driving his mom to town early on a Saturday morning. Robert continues with his account. As we turned onto River Road, I had an overwhelming feeling that something was wrong. I stopped the car and put on the seatbelt. I had never worn one. My old Ford did not have them, and I was adamant that Mom put hers on also. She refused, saying it hurt her hernia and she would be fine. I relented, and we had a pleasant drive along the Santiam River. As we turned off the river road and headed to Highway 20, she suggested we take the shortcut to Sodaville Road. This was a short gravel road and at that time was overgrown with bushes, so you were driving through dense plants on each side, ones that leaned into the road. At the end of the road was a raised railroad crossing, one of those where you have to drive up and over the track. The crossing sign was so old it had collapsed, and the X was almost straight up and down. The sun was over my shoulder, and the bushes were brightly lit. The brush had not been cut back for the year, and the tracks were raised just enough that you had to slow down to get over them. As I slowed to look, I could not see down the track to the left. I drove forward and heard a thud. I was flying through a swirling blue tube so fast. I saw a bright blue light surrounding a white soft glow, shot through the light at what seemed a million miles an hour, stopped and was standing on a sill, looking in at all the souls who ever were or ever would be. The nearest were familiar, an aunt, and some others from the past. As I came up to the edge, I was met and embraced by such a powerful feeling of joy, good, and well-being that I began to forget everything before. I could remember everything that had ever happened to me, see the faces of everyone I had ever known, and this was all at once and forever all at the same time. Well, I use the word time because that is what we know, but there is no time there. The fact is that there is no there, no sight, sound, anything we can relate to. It is the best I can do to put the whole thing in words that may make sense. I could feel different people, but there was a deep sense of perfectness, quiet, and wonder. I felt such overwhelming joy and love. I was given a very direct choice of whether to stay or return, but was encouraged to return. I was there for a long time deciding. They helped me with my decision, showed me great things, knowledge, the future, energy, all things. Then I turned and went back. The only way to describe what happened next was to have you visualize being braided like strands of flowing water with other souls, made whole and returned into this world to a point above the car. I could see the whole world, then the horizon, then the scene below me. There was a train with our car stuck to the front. A crowd of frantic people. An ambulance was pulling up. Fire trucks, cars, and trucks stopped on both sides of the road. I watched this for a very long time. Then the strand continued down into the car, and I was back inside my body. I opened my eyes to bright white. My right arm was free. So I lifted it and brought it to my eyes, only to find cloth covering me. I pulled it off, heard people yelling and a few screams. As I looked over, a woman who was holding my mom's head fainted. There was a flurry of panic and excitement, and one of the guys started talking to me. I focused on what was going on and realized there was a train in my lap. My legs were bent back at the knee just a bit, and the coupler was atop my lap, and the knuckle was resting just to my right. The seatbelt had pulled me down with the frame of the car and held me while the coupler came through the door, or really, over the door. I felt no pain, just a lot of pressure, but my right hand had a piece of window glass through it between the thumb and the fingers, and I was watching it start to bleed. Blood had been pooling in my arm, and now things were working again, so the blood was really coming out. They wrapped my hand with the glass still in it, I guess to keep it from bleeding even more. The sheet had been put over me by one of the ambulance guys. He found no pulse, no breathing. He said he used a hand mirror to see if I was breathing, and my hand was not bleeding. They were all convinced I was gone, for good, so when I pulled the sheet off after so long a time, it was a real shock. It's hard to figure out just how long I was gone, but the train hit us, traveled 510 feet, cars stopped, the ambulance was called, and they had been there long enough to get Mom almost out of the car when I came back. The hospital is 4 miles from the crash, so they may have taken 5 or 6 minutes to get there. The reason it is so hard to put a time on the event is that there is no time there. It seemed like a lifetime that I was there. There was so much to learn. I tell people, it's kind of like being a person living in a deep forest that has never seen anyone but his friends and family, never seen a plane in the air. Suddenly, a helicopter drops a net on you and takes you at the speed of light to Times Square at midnight, leaves you there for a few minutes, then flies you back, drops you in the middle of your village, and your friends all run up to you and ask, "What was it like?" Here Robert continues on about getting the train off of him and getting his mom to the hospital. And he explains that his mom recovers okay. This happened on a Saturday morning, and just a few days later, Robert returned to school on crutches. Robert notes, "After a few days, I tossed the crutches and began to realize I was not the same person who had left on that Saturday morning. Without thinking about it too much or realizing this was not normal, I began to see, hear, smell, and feel everything around me. It was like being in the 360-degree lens I was in during my ascent back to the car. It was a little overwhelming, and it took a long time to get used to it. Then, when I did, I just assumed everyone was doing the same thing. To this day, I am still amazed at how little people see and hear of what is around them. I have put to good use over the years in the Army and just about every day of this talent. The other odd thing is my hands. They heat up so much they almost glow. I can put my hands a foot away from someone and they can feel the heat. I have worked with people who have had joint problems and other health issues. They claim it helps, but I have no idea what or why it is there." The next two NDEs. August 8, 1994. After 3 years of a medical trial testing a drug that reduced the production of acid in the stomach, many endoscopies and other endoscopies, and the assurance of my doctor that it would be an easy and quick surgery, a Nissen fundoplication, I went into the VA hospital in Portland, Oregon. After prep and a brief meeting with the surgeon in charge, I was put under. Hello again. I was back to where I had been many years before, surrounded by light and warmth and the feeling of familiarity of those who had been close to me in the past. Again, I was bathed in the feeling of perfectness. I was quite suddenly pulled back to the room, and I could see the people panicking and feel their dread. I watched as they worked on me and used the paddles to kickstart me. Then I was awake in the recovery room. I was still trying to organize what had happened when one of the nurses and a doctor came in and told me, "Well, 3 hours into a 2-hour surgery, things went bad. My thorax muscles had a spasm, and the carbon dioxide that they had inflated me with was expelled up through my lungs. My heart stopped. My lungs were popcorned, whatever that means, and I was gone. They got me back and reinflated me, finished the procedure, stitch up the little laparoscopic holes, and all was well. They sat me up, gave me a little pillow to hold against my stomach, and told me to breathe carefully and slowly for a few hours. Then they left, and another nurse came in and hooked me up to a couple of monitors. My girlfriend came in and sat with me, held my hand, and I dozed off. I woke up feeling very out of breath, as if I had just run a sprint. Odd, thought I, as I began to breathe in, but could only take short, small breaths. I told the nurse, whom I had sent Maria to get, that I was sure something was wrong. She assured me that it was normal to feel that way and not to worry. Out of body. About an hour later, this was about 6 hours after they had finished the surgery, I was beginning to feel panicked. I could not breathe in more than a small gulp of air. I felt as if I were drowning. I kept trying to get someone to pay attention to what was going on, but they simply would not respond. I sat there, and in one moment, I shall never forget, I yelled, stood up, and listened to the monitor go from a pulse to a solid tone. I had flatlined. I was out of my body now. I was out of my now limp and quite dead body. I floated up and watched in wonder as they ran into the room. They threw me on a gurney and ran me down the hall into an elevator, then out into the hall and into a room where they threw me over the bed on my front, took huge needles, and pushed them into my back and up into my lung cavity, and drained the fluid off. I can still see those two people working in tandem, drawing out the gray, thick fluid. They then turned me over and began to prod. The one doctor with dark hair had an accent, jumped on me, put a scalpel to the skin just under my left nipple, and cut in along the rib. I woke up. They said you could hear the scream 2 floors away. They inserted a rib spreader and then put in a tube. Then they repeated the process on my left side under my arm, twice. They missed the first time and had to do it again. If you take your finger right now and find the place where you are most sensitive, about halfway from your armpit to where your elbow touches your side, and press, you will find the place where they cut me open and put in another hose. 3 tubes overall. This was a most unpleasant experience, and one I do not recommend, ever. I spent many weeks on my back with the globbit-globbita machine attached to me like a hungry octopus. I became weaker and lost more weight until I was about 165 pounds. I was being eaten from the inside. When I had deflated, the laparoscopic tools that were inside me nicked a bowel and punctured the pleura, introducing an E. coli infection into my lung cavity, where he and his offspring set up housekeeping and were very happy, warm, and well-fed. 5 p.m. The doctors came into the room next to the MRI lab, and he sat down on the gurney. While she took my hand, "You are going to die if we do not do this surgery right now." I smiled and told them they were too late. They said I had about a 30% chance of living if they operated within the next couple of hours, and brought me a phone. Call your family and friends and tell them goodbye. Goodbye, perhaps. Those calls were the best and worst calls I have ever made. I cry as I write this, thinking of the pure love that I felt for those who had been there with me and that were now hearing me say farewell. As they put me under, I felt the most amazing sense of peace. I opened my eyes to the smiling face of the doctor. He patted my hand and congratulated me on surviving. You must be here for some other purpose. You must have work to do. I left the hospital a few weeks later, weighing 162 pounds. When I went in, I was 219 pounds. Not a weight loss plan I would recommend. And that is Robert C.'s account of his multiple STEs, including his two NDEs. Let's take a look at some of the details of Robert's experience. Very interesting how Robert, when he was just 3 years old, was apparently able to foresee his family's barn catching fire. He said he had a few more of those events, though the only other one he shares in his account is when he ran from the school in the middle of the day and found where his mom had fallen and cut her arm badly. He says these experiences were greeted by his father with long periods of silence and his father watching Robert closely. We can imagine what his dad must have been thinking. Well, you can imagine that his father probably felt like one of those characters in a movie when very strange things, unexplainable things are happening to someone they love. I envision how the mom felt in the sixth sense. And take into account that these events happened in the late 40s or possibly the early 50s, and apparently in a very rural area. Many people today are far more accustomed to hearing about these types of things and possibly a little bit more aware that they are not satanic. And then just before he has his first NDE, by having his car hit by a train and dragged over 500 feet, Robert gets the thought that something was wrong. So strong was this feeling that he put on his seatbelt, which he had never previously worn. A good reminder to us to remember to be aware of our feelings and intuitions. In fact, it might be prudent to make an effort to develop that aspect of ourselves. Robert's car gets smashed into by a train, and he suddenly is flying through a swirling blue tube, and he sees a bright blue light surrounded by a white soft glow. And he gets shot through the light at what seemed like a million miles an hour. Then he stops and thinks he's standing on a sill. A sill. This has come up in the last few NDE accounts read by Chaz, and Sam Struder spoke of this archetypal significance in his interview in item number 316. Robert is on this sill, and he is looking in at all the souls who ever were or ever would be. That alone is something to think about. Can you even try to imagine how many souls that would be, and how far it would extend? We've all seen pictures of massive gatherings, such as concerts. Maybe there were 100,000 people in attendance, sprawled out over a large distance. So imagine how far that vision would stretch to include every soul that ever was or ever would be. Now, did they appear as bodies with faces, as we think of when we picture a large crowd, or were they different in appearance, as he describes them as souls? Robert says he thinks the souls nearest to him were familiar, maybe an aunt, and some others from his past. He is then met and embraced by such a powerful feeling of joy, good, and well-being that he begins to forget everything before. This sounds a lot like what Dr. Ray described back in item 269, when he was rising out of his body in the ambulance ride. Remember, Dr. Ray said he felt so much peace that it was the most pleasurable feeling that you can have. He said there was so much freedom that you don't really care about anything you're leaving behind. Back to what Robert experienced, he said he could remember everything that had ever happened to him, see the faces of everyone he had ever known, And this was all at once and forever, all at the same time. So Robert notes he uses the word time in this account because that's what we know and can relate to here. But he states there is no time there. In fact, he says there is no there. No sight, no sound, no anything that we can relate to in our earthly plane to what we experience there. He says it seemed like a lifetime that he was there. There was so much to learn. When people ask Robert what it was like there, in Robert's response to the NDERF website question, was the experience difficult to express in words? Robert gives us a wonderful metaphor. He says, it's like being a member of the indigenous Yanomamo from the Amazon rainforest of Colombia. Drop a net on him and fly him at the speed of light to Times Square at midnight. Leave him there for a few minutes, then drop him back in the middle of his village and his friends all run up and ask, what was it like? Elucidate the ineffable. We are so grateful to those who try. Slowly, we can try to put together pieces of the picture. Admittedly, we can at best only see a microscopic portion of the whole picture, but it is in our nature to try and understand the best we can. Robert notes, there was a deep sense of perfectness, quiet, and wonder. Now that's a stark contrast to the Times Square at midnight metaphor. So we really should try to imagine taking someone from our chaotic and hectic world and drop them into a realm of perfectness, quiet, and wonder. This is probably why so many feel that going back to nature on a walk in the woods, or an isolated campsite, a walk on the beach, helps them feel closer to God. The God that created that perfectness, that quiet and wonder in the realm Robert visited, is the same God who created our earth, the same God that created us. Getting a chance to experience some unadulterated earth would be a very good way to better appreciate our Creator. Robert says he was given a very direct choice of whether to stay or return, but he was encouraged to return. He says, I was there for a long time deciding. So even though there is no time there as we conceptualize it here, there seems to be an ability to sense the prolongation of a moment. Robert does not elaborate on who or what gave him the choice to return or stay. Who were they? Was it the multitude of souls? It would be great to be able to speak to Robert about these kinds of details. He does note in the answers to his questions of the NDERF account, when asked what the experience included, he says, the experience included the presence of unearthly beings. That sounds quite different from the souls he saw, some of which were his deceased relatives. But whoever they are, they helped him with his decision by showing him great things, knowledge, the future, energy, all things. Then Robert turned and went back to his body. In trying to better understand about these things they showed him to help him decide, these great things, knowledge, the future, energy, all things, we can get further insight from his answers to the question, did you suddenly seem to understand everything? Robert says, everything about the universe, very complicated, time event horizons, greater good, joy of giving, power to know what will happen. These are things we can think about while we're here. Working for the greater good, the joy of giving. We all have the ability here in our lifetimes to improve in these areas. They seem to be very important concepts in our eternal future. And that term, the greater good, has come up in other NDEs. Working towards the greater good here in this realm sounds like something we should try and understand and work towards. Then Robert explains how he returns to his body. He says, to envision being braided like strands of flowing water with other souls, made whole and returned to this world to a point above the car. Braided with other souls, made whole. Now, that's not his earthly body being made whole, because he has not gone back into his body at that point. So he must be thinking of his soul, his energy being made whole. In Dr. Michael Newton's books, he speaks of how people spoke of having energy renewed when they were between lives. Returning to his body is a process. It's not just snap and you're there. He relates that he could see the whole world, then the horizon, then the scene where his body was below him. He observes from that point for a very long time before the braided strand continues down into the car and inside his body. A body that has been covered up with a sheet, because the ambulance personnel found that body to have no pulse, no respirations, including the use of a mirror to detect signs of air movement, and no bleeding from the pulseless hand with a large glass shard in it. A wound that suddenly started bleeding after Robert returned to his body via the braided strand. Robert estimates there would have been 5 or 6 minutes of time after the collision before he returned to consciousness. And it's interesting how he managed to heal so quickly from his injuries. Some of those details I didn't get into the report, but the fact that he could just go to school within a few days on crutches, certainly wearing a seatbelt and not having his legs get amputated from the train, came into play. But we've had other NDEers talk about how quickly they've healed. Then Robert has a second NDE when he was put under anesthesia for surgery. Suddenly he's back to where he was during his first NDE, surrounded by the light, the warmth, the feeling of familiarity of all those that had been close to him. Again, he was bathed in the feeling of perfectness, perfectness. Then he suddenly pulled back into his body as they defibrillated him. I guess we shouldn't be too surprised that he would return to the same place, if that's the destination. So while this NDE was very brief compared to the first, it seems to validate his first experience. Robert goes on to experience complications from his surgery, has an out-of-body experience, floats above his body, watches them drain fluids from his thorax and place chest tubes. Again, validation that consciousness does not reside in our bodies. When asked if he has any psychic, non-ordinary, or other special gifts after his experience that he did not have before his experience, Robert replies, yes, extreme intuition. Also, lots stronger physically. I have proven the old adage, be careful what you wish for, you may get it. Indeed, Robert. Indeed. Robert C., I would love to interview for this show. If you can, please contact me. Our contact information is on the website, ndepodcast.org. So some quick takeaways from Robert C.'s experiences. Life is precious. There will come a time when you have to say your goodbyes, if you're fortunate enough to even have that opportunity. Make the most of every day. We should probably develop our intuition and our feelings. We take that with us when we cross over. Every relationship, every person you come in contact with does so for a reason. Pay attention to your relationships. Work for the greater good. The joy of giving. If you'd like to contact the show, you can reach Chaz by using chaz@ndepodcast.org. You can reach me by using john@ndepodcast.org. You can text the show or leave a voicemail by calling 970-623-2278. That's 970-623-CAST. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by using NDE Podcast, and links are on our webpage. If you'd like to keep the show financially viable, you can do so by using ndepodcast@patreon.com. Chaz and I deeply appreciate those of you who listen and share the show, and those who do follow us on social media, write reviews, and who contribute to us via Patreon. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, this is your host, John Messer, reminding you it's all about attitude and gratitude, and our attitudes must surely be love.